Good afternoon. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. I'm Donna Siebel, the host of the show, and we have got a fascinating program for you today. We're going to be talking about a subject where there's a lot of people that are going to have certain opinions in a certain way, and others are going to have opinions in another way. My guest today is Dr. Michael Rabinoff. He is with the Neuropsychiatric Center and Hospital Center for the Health Sciences in Los Angeles. He also has a UCLA office. This is a man who has a passion for helping people maintain wellness. He is a psychiatrist who has two patents and has published in the New England Journal of Medicine and other very, very highly recognized medical journals. And his big comment, and his book is all about ending the tobacco holocaust. And according to the World Health Organization, 1 billion people will die from smoking in this century. Dr. Michael Rabinoff, welcome to my show.
Thank you for having me on the show, Donna.
You have, in this book, and I first met you, let's backstep a little bit here. I first met you in New York at the National Publicity Summit. And when you had your 2 minutes of time to chat with me about this book, when I first heard the title, I had this feeling like, I really don't want to get into politics on this issue of tobacco, so on and so forth. But you said, Don, I think you're going to find the book interesting. May I send you a copy? You did, and you were absolutely correct. I found the information in it was extremely interesting. It was very, very informative. And it's a delight for me to be able to share this with our listeners today on the air. Now, you've written this book, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you want to educate people. What was the personal positioning that you had as a physician that caused you to have such a passion for this over and above anything else you've been involved with?
I witnessed unimaginable suffering in my medical and psychiatric training and practice. I saw people with lung cancer, with other tumors riddled through their body, paralyzed by a stroke, unable to breathe and gasping for air due to emphysema, experiencing excruciating pain to unstable angina, admitted for a heart attack or having a limb amputated due to percolation or having liters of fluid drained from the lining of their lungs due to spreading cancer or hallucinating from tumors that had spread to their brain from elsewhere in their body or suffering from many other debilitating illnesses. And I knew that smoking directly caused all of that suffering and that that suffering repeats itself daily in almost every hospital in the world. And I wanted to do something about it. In psychiatry, I see this every day in my practice. Most people don't know that, according to research by Dr. Lasser, reported in the Journal of American Medical Association, 44.3% of cigarettes consumed in the United States are smoked by people with mental illness. Certain mental illnesses have very high rates. Schizophrenia patients used to have about a 90% smoking rate. Now it's about 70%. And people with major depression, bipolar disorder, panic disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder have smoking rates between 45 and 65%. And so I see this literally every day in my office. And while I'm treating people for psychiatric issues, many times I see that the major physical health problems and the reason for their death is actually due to smoking. In schizophrenic patients, the average schizophrenic patient in the United States lives about 16.2 years less than the general population. And it turns out that the average smoker lives about 14 years less than the person who's never smoked. And so most of the early death rate seems to be due to their smoking behavior. And so I really have seen this so much, and I wanted to do something about it.
You have some information that I think is important to share with my listeners. You say currently about one-fifth of Americans die in some way because of cigarette smoking. Every single day, more than 1,000 Americans, in excess of 8,000 a week, or more than 35,000 a month, are killed by the effects of smoking. Its cost in dollars and human lives staggers the imagination. And you give some information about the World Health Organization. So they do a lot of research onto this. They said up to 16 million Americans lost their lives to cigarette smoking between 1950 and 2000. And you also say that the World Health Organization set the estimate of smokers at 1.3 billion worldwide in 2003, and that its projections show that the number is rising to 1.7 billion by the year 2025. Who is the biggest consumer of cigarettes in the world today?
Well, in terms of nations, it's China. China has about 1/6 of the population, 1/4 of the smokers, and they actually manufacture 1/3 of the cigarettes in the world. So they, by percentage-wise, would be the biggest consumer. It's still a problem all over the place. In the United States, people think the problem sort of has been taken care of by the Master Settlement Agreement, but the smoking rate has stopped declining and is starting to increase in the underage population again. And this is something we need to reinforce our efforts so that we can get a handle on this problem and really take care of it, because it's a major problem for our country, which most people may not be aware of. Besides the fact that 1/5, as you mentioned, of Americans die from this problem, it's actually about 400,000 people die from smoking now, and about 53,000 die from secondhand smoke. In fact, last year, the Surgeon General's report was on secondhand smoke and definitively concluded that over 50,000 Americans die from this problem anymore. So it's not a question. The tobacco companies have tried to deny that. It's a medical fact that those number of people die each year. In fact, that's greater than all the people who die from motor vehicle accidents each year. So smoking and secondhand smoke takes a great toll on our country. It also affects our finances greatly. The Surgeon General reported that in 1995 to 1997, the cost to our economy from smoking was $157 billion. And when you add on to that medical inflation, which is greater than regular inflation, plus regular inflation and also the effects of secondhand smoke and fires, et cetera, it's now approaching $250 billion a year. This is a burden that we as citizens have to bear. And it's whether you're a smoker or not, it's affecting your pocketbook. In terms of taxes, we pay for Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, veterans benefits. These are all costs that we as citizens bear. And it affects us locally. It affects us as employees because we have to pay our higher health premiums. And it affects us not only as employees. Let's say the employer, when they want to hire somebody, they have to figure in the cost for health insurance. And so they can pay us, if we're employees, less because of that. I don't have the direct cost for Ford Motor Company related to smoking, but Ford Motor Company has said that $1,200 of every Ford car they produce has to go to medical benefits of their employees. So it's a major cost for all of us that we need to look at. And it's also a great cost to our society. I think there's a undercurrent of suffering that's not spoken about a lot because of smoking. Since 1 out of 5 people dies from this problem, most families will have had someone who's been affected by this. And if not directly in the family, a friend, acquaintance. And if they haven't had that, in the last few years, people like Johnny Carson died from smoking and Peter Jennings. So these are people we've invited into our home. So this literally affects all of us on many different levels. And it's ongoing, and we need to take care of this problem, which is it's totally preventable and totally unnecessary. The other issue, people may have an issue about smoking. Well, adults are smoking, and it's their problem. They're doing it to themselves. But in fact, 80% of smokers start before the age of 18. That means it's our children and underage teens. This is a pediatric disease of who is becoming addicted to cigarettes. It used to be 90% in the U.S. Now it's 80%. And so it's the children of our country who are really becoming addicted to this product and will eventually die from their smoking.
You also bring up a point of information that I found intriguing. You work a great deal with the Veterans Administration in their hospital in West Los Angeles. And at the time that you were actively involved in, 60% of all the people that enrolled for services were smokers.
Correct.
Most of those people would have come up through the Korean War, the Second World War, the Vietnam War, and that's quite a statistic. Is that something that when they're admitted into the hospital, it's part of the questioning? Are you a smoker? You know, how many cigarettes do you smoke? Is this something that's important to medical diagnostic treatment?
Yes, and I don't work at that facility anymore, but when I was working there, they did make it eventually a smoke-free facility, and it's an issue that so many of the patients suffer from. Literally, when I would be on some medical rounds, on some days, every single patient I saw suffering or dying was suffering or dying from the effects of smoking because the rate was so high in that population. Veterans suffer from smoking problems much greater than the general population. That facility had a very high rate. The national average is about 33%, which is much higher than the 21 to 22% of the general adult population that smokes. And that is possibly because they were given for a long time free cigarettes and then greatly discounted cigarettes until that was stopped during the Clinton administration. People used to be able to go to the PXs and buy cigarettes for, you know, like 50 cents a pack. Even right now, they get it cheaper on military bases than off military bases because they don't have to pay taxes, the state taxes or anything like that, on cigarettes. So it's less of a financial incentive to smoke now for vets. I mean, they have to pay close to what the public does, but mm-hmm. it's still less.
Mm-hmm. Now, I can remember years ago when I had thought, gee, maybe I'd like to try this. I was a teenager. It was really the in thing for all teenagers. It was supposed to make you look very special or very macho. And I'll never forget, one, it was not that appealing to me, and so I was being a little rebellious, as most young kids are, and I don't think the young people of today are any different from my generation in that respect. And yet I read an article about how much money I would save because of the time and cigarettes have always been a luxury item, to be perfectly frank. And at that time, and I calculated how much money I could save up, and I thought, gee whiz, I could buy new dresses. So the dresses went out over the cigarettes.
Uh-huh.
That was many years ago. But I've never liked it, really. I've never liked the taste of it. I've never liked the smell of it. And I was surprised to find a bit of information in your book that there are 4,000 chemicals released when a cigarette is smoked that causes damage throughout the body. I didn't think 4,000 chemicals could fit into one single cigarette.
Well, when tobacco and the other constituents of cigarettes burn, many chemicals are formed. And another issue about cigarettes, currently cigarettes are extremely different than they used to be like 70 years ago. Most people think of cigarettes as just rolled tobacco with mm-hmm. some paper around it. That's not what a cigarette is. It's highly engineered, and there are chemicals put in the cigarettes which affect the chemistry. People may not know that they are getting freebase nicotine, which is equivalent of crack is to cocaine. They are getting what is called freebase nicotine as opposed to particulate nicotine. The cigarettes have been engineered, so there's this type of nicotine produced that gets in the body and goes to the brain much faster and affects the brain. So it's actually more addictive. Then the tobacco companies have learned to add lots of sugar, which has several effects. One is young people like the taste of sugar, but beyond that, it turns out that when sugars are burned, they form a chemical called acetaldehyde. And in the 1980s, Philip Morris learned that rats would bar press, not just for nicotine, they would separately bar press for acetaldehyde, and they would bar press the most for the combination. And they have other chemicals that increase the addictiveness in cigarettes. And so these cigarettes are actually highly engineered and have more addictive chemicals than just the nicotine. That is one reason I think that the patch has become, in terms of data, somewhat less effective than it used to be, because when people try to get off the cigarettes with just the patch, they're getting the replacement of the nicotine, but they're not getting the replacement of these other chemicals. And the tobacco companies learned about this, and they're using these methodologies to keep their smokers. Another way they've kept smokers is the state of Massachusetts recently published an article showing that the tobacco companies increased the level of nicotine in cigarettes 10% from 1998, when the Master Settlement Agreement occurred, to the present. And this is another way they can keep the smokers addicted to the cigarettes. So this is a highly engineered product. Another example of engineering is what is called front-end lift. One would think, when one is smoking a cigarette, that as the cigarette burns down, you're going to get more concentrated chemicals and nicotine. But the tobacco companies knew that they needed to give people their nicotine relief for their addiction right away. So companies learned to engineer front-end lift, which would mean the highest level of free-base nicotine occurs in the first few puffs of the cigarette.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, natural tobacco in its own form, which has been a part of many, many cultures, to the best of my knowledge, was not something that was carcinogenic. It wasn't used like people use cigarettes today. It was something that was part of ritual ceremony. It wasn't something that was used all the time. And I know through the years that tobacco, chewing tobacco, has been known to cause cancer of the mouth.
Correct.
And gums. And it is from the acids and other things that are released from the chewing. And when people do this a lot, they end up having problems in the mouth because of the overabundance of chemicals that are there. And this has been known. I mean, this was talked about when I was a little girl. And I want to go back to something you said earlier, that everybody's affected, and I want to share with the audience. I have a firsthand experience with the downside of smoking. My dad had been in World War II, and he, like many soldiers, picked up the habit of smoking. He was from Italy, and he did it just like everybody else did. And I can remember when I was a tiny little girl seeing my father spitting up blood in the bathroom sink. He'd have this terrible, terrible cough. And I think at that time he was in his 40s, late 40s, and he was just spitting up blood, and I can remember being frightened by this. And I remember hearing a conversation, again, I was a very small girl, that it was because of the Camel cigarettes that he was smoking. And when he wanted to get rid of the spitting up of the blood, then he would switch to another brand. He switched to, I don't even know if menthol was out then, but maybe something like that. I don't remember. But as it turned out, in his late 60s, he ended up with lung cancer. And his death was a very slow process of happening. And he suffered terribly. And there was nothing anybody could do. And he literally suffocated to death. So I can say from an observation of members of family and other people that I've known, I have a friend whose mother and father, they both had severe respiratory problems because of being heavy-duty smokers for most of their lives, and it was something to see them puffing away on a cigarette while they are surviving on a respirator, a portable respirator with oxygen. And their daughter ended up, after seeing what she saw, ended up giving up smoking because of what she saw with her parents. But she said, it doesn't make sense. Why are you continuing to smoke? And in your book, you say that 40% of smokers who've had a tracheotomy continue to puff away after their operations, and 50% of those who lost a lung to cancer still smoke. This is a major thing. It's not easy for them to give it up.
It's very addictive. It's thought to be as or more addictive than being addicted to heroin or cocaine. I actually have patients who've been both smokers and drug addicts, and they've told me that giving up the smoking is the hardest thing. And so we have to have compassion for smokers and also hopefully help them to quit, because it literally is their life. The average smoker lives 14 years less, the average male smoker 13 and a half years, the average female smoker 14 and a half years less than non-smokers. It's their finances. You were alluding to that before. It turns out that if an individual at 18 starts smoking a pack a day, and if it's $6 a pack in some parts of the country, let's say they spend $2,000 a year on smoking and its effects, and not addressing the health effects, they would be $96,000 in debt at they would have spent that much by age 65. But if they just put that in a Roth IRA because it's after-tax money and it compounded at the normal 11% a year that the stock market goes up historically over the long term, they would have $2.9 million tax-free when they retire at 65. So smoking actually puts the poorer segments of the population into more poverty. And so there's this economic incentive. I have a story in my book by a lady named Michelle where she was smoking and she found it very hard to quit but eventually gave up for the love of her husband and children. And she took that money and used it to finance her dream, which was a fancy chocolate store. And she's been in business now 20-some years, having financed her dream with the money that would have otherwise gone to cigarettes. So the smoking habit, you know, we know is deadly. The money can be used for other things that could benefit people. And as I talk about methods to quit, one of the first steps I recommend is having a big enough why. People have to know why they personally want to quit. It can be for money, for their dream. It could be for a loved one, a child. It could be for family members. It could be to not expose people around them to, you know, the deadly secondhand smoke. There are many reasons, but they have to find it internally for themselves. They're big enough why, and knowing that and remembering that, that will give them the strength to be able to quit.
My guest has, or is today, Dr. Michael Rabinoff. We're talking about ending the tobacco holocaust. We're not talking about this from a point of good guy, bad guy, in the sense of, gee, this person's evil. I'm not interested in the political ramifications. I am interested in the facts. The facts are we have something that is very detrimental to physical well-being. Now, I know there are people out there that have been smoking for years. I have a friend that's in his 90s that has been smoking, and he's never, ever had a problem with his respiratory tract. But the fact is that many times if you check on these people, maybe they don't smoke very often, and maybe for some reason their chemistry, their body chemistry, just is not affected by it. But for the majority of people, this is something that has a tremendous impact on their well-being, especially on the respiratory factor. And anybody who's involved in sports, anyone who is physically active, if they've ever smoked, they can tell you that they suffer really with respiratory capacity because they can't get enough air. And Dr. Rabinoff, you have a wonderful story in here. Well, it's a sad story, but it's an exemplary story about Alice and air hunger. Could you discuss that story?
Well, Alice was a patient of mine, and she came in for treatment of depression. She had not been a smoker until she married, and her husband was a smoker, and she picked up the habit. And she was married about a decade, and when they got divorced, she actually stopped smoking, and she thought she had gotten away with not having adverse effects from smoking. But the damage to her lungs had been done. Our ability to utilize oxygen decreases as we age. The total amount of oxygen we can bring in at a time declines as we age. And so with the normal decline after she stopped smoking, she got to a point where what we call air hunger occurred. She could not get enough oxygen to do her normal daily needs and or activities, and she needed to carry an oxygen tank. And you may see this as people walk around with an oxygen tank. This occurs because of smoking. 90% of emphysema is actually caused by smoking in the United States. And so she had this tremendous air hunger, and she was in despair over it, and suffered tremendously because of it. One example would be there were times when she would try and put on makeup, and she'd try and take off the oxygen hose from her nose, and she'd literally faint or hit her head when she was fainting and suffered a lot due to that. Eventually, we got her depression under control, but her health deteriorated. She was in the hospital, suffered many severe bouts of illness, and unfortunately eventually died from these adverse effects of smoking. So when people think that it may not happen to them as a smoker, it, in so many cases it does, and it's so important to catch it as early as possible in one's life, because otherwise damage may have been done that may not be totally reversible.
My guest today is Dr. Michael Rabinoff. His book is titled Ending the Tobacco Holocaust. It's all about how tobacco affects our health, our pocketbook, and also our freedom, our ability to be that independent person we want to be, and what we can do about it. And according to the World Health Organization, 1 billion people will die from smoking in this century. If you want to educate yourself more about this, if you want to be informed on some groups that are working towards better health, if you want to take a proactive positioning of wellness regarding this, then I would encourage you to get this book. It is very informative. If you have young people that are involved or they think it's really cool to do this, sharing information is one of the best ways to get a concept across. And if you know of anybody that has emphysema, take the young people around them, show them, say, this is what happens, this is what can occur. It's something that's very important. If you want to be well, be educated. And in being educated, that means that you read, you listen, you become an informed individual. And that's what Dr. Michael Rabinoff's book, Ending the Tobacco Holocaust, does for us. What is your website, Dr. Rabinoff, that people can go to find out more information?
www.tobaccobook.com. Again, www.tobaccobook.com. And there's free information on there. There's lists of resources. There's information on quitting smoking, as well as web links so that people can click over and buy at Barnes & Noble or Amazon or find border stores or other stores if they're interested in purchasing the book.
Well, I'm so delighted to have you as a guest. I know your schedule has been incredibly busy and you're on the road traveling at this time, and I appreciate your making time for our interview today, and I wish you continued success in your work. I think your book is a phenomenal publication, a real eye-opener, and it gives such good details and information. I think it empowers people to know more about how to stay well, how to be well, and how to encourage the people around them to not give up. If they are a smoker, they can break the habit.
Well, thank you, Donna, for having me on the show and allowing me to present this material to your audience.
It has been a pleasure. Best wishes always. This is Donna Sebo. We are going to be going to a break for just a moment. We'll be back sharing some other good things with you, so don't go away. You're not going to want to miss any of it. Donna Sebo here. We'll be back in just a moment, and phone lines will be open, so we'll be giving that telephone number out. Dr. Michael Rabinoff has been my guest. His fascinating book, informative book, Ending the Tobacco Holocaust. You'll want to have it for your library. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Hey, our phone lines are open, and if you'd like to call in and chat with me, I would be delighted to share my intuitive skills with you and light up your life with a little bit of insight. Here are the toll-free numbers. In the U.S. of A, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. For Canadians, 888-810-8322. That's 888-810-8322. And for anyone else, 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. When you call in, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And after that, just let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask a question about anything that you like. And there's no such thing as a dumb question. I'll just let you know about that. So give me a buzz if you would like to chat during the next half hour. I wanted to share a story with you today that I thought is so important, because we're always having to look at our perceptions, expectations, anticipations, whatever word you want to use. This story I heard a number of years ago, and I just think it is so poignant because it really brought to mind, after a conversation with someone, how our attitudes really make a difference and colors how we view things. And again, this is an old, old story. You probably have heard it before. And this is a rendition of a particular type. It's all about a man who is catching a ferry. And this is a ferry that's going across a very large body of water. And as he is riding this ferry, he happens to have the opportunity to talk with the ferryman, and he's chatting away, and he asked the ferryman how long he'd been, you know, doing this ferry work, and he said, well, I've been doing it for a lot of years. In fact, my whole life, I was raised in this area. And this man said, oh, wow, that's really interesting. Do you happen to know about this town? And he mentioned the town's name, and the man says, oh, sure. He said, I know just about everybody in that town. And he said, well, what do you think of the town? And the ferryman looked at the person, and he said, well, what are the people like where you come from? And the man who was moving to this new town, he responded, he said, oh, the people are terrible. I encountered all kinds of prejudice. It was absolutely awful. And he said, I just don't know how to express how relieved I am to be moving into this new place. And the ferryman just shook his head. He said, well, you know what? I'm afraid you're going to find the people in this town to be pretty much the same way. Well, the man was, oh, that did not make his day. He said, oh, no. Oh, no, no, no. You can't mean that. And he said, oh, yeah. He said, I do. Well, just as the conversation was closing up, the ferry comes in to dock. This gentleman gets off, and he's mumbling and grumbling about how where he left it was so unpleasant, and now it looks like he's going to go into the same environment. Boy, he wished that he had really known more information, and he was sort of walking off mumbling to himself. Well, the ferryman is getting ready to take the ferry back across this body of water again, and there's someone that gets on along with a number of other people, and on his way back across, and he finds that there's a conversation by another person, and this time it's a woman, and she's talking to him, and she said, well, I wonder what it's like. You know, I've been over in XYZ environment, and I'm moving to a new place, and do you know anything about this particular town? And he says, oh, yeah. He said, I know all about it. I've been on this river for all my life, and I know both sides of the river very, very well. And she said, okay, well, I'd like to ask you a question. What are the people like in this town that I'm going to be going to? So he looked at her and sort of smiled, and he said, well, what are the people like where you come from? And she said, oh, they are the most wonderful people. I'm really going to miss living where I am, but my job has forced me to change, and I say forced because the company closed down and they're relocating, and I'm going to have to go to this new area because I really like my job. I don't want to give it up, but I'm going to miss these people. I made so many good friends, and I had such a good life there. It was just such a warm, comfortable environment. And the ferryman said, well, you know what? I think you're going to pretty much find the same thing. I think you're going to find the same thing right where you're going. Now, what is perception? It's perception is usually what we expect, isn't it? We have our attitudes. We have what we think things are going to have to be. We expect, dependent on what our background is and maybe what we've been indoctrinated with, that X, Y, Z is, gee, the only way that something should be. That's just the way it's going to be. Where in truth, if we just relax and maybe allow some variables to come in, we might be pleasantly surprised. Have you ever noticed people that have attitudes that this is black and this is white and there's no gray in between? They get to be a bit old after a while, don't you think? They're sort of like dead fish. After 3 days, their attitude really stinks. So the key is, if something like this aggravates you or you see it, you need to say to yourself, I want to be sure I give someone else the opportunity and the circumstances an opportunity to really show themselves so that I can make a determination with right information. And that is a habit that's a good habit to acquire. That's why if you are in conversation with someone for the first time, it's always a good idea to listen. It's amazing. Let me share with you a lesson that I learned, and this was with a gentleman that I happened to have lunch with, and I'll never forget, I was in my 20s, and I was a young mom, and it was very difficult for me to ever have a chance to go out for a meal. Well, this was a gentleman that I had the opportunity to be in a very nice working environment with, and he had quite an incredible background. He was a race car driver. He had this wonderful array of stories that he'd always share whenever I would be around him, and I'd listen to them. He's just a great guy, and he was a mature gentleman. He was in his 70s, and so he invited me out to lunch to this wonderful, wonderful restaurant, and I'll never forget just being overwhelmed with this buffet spread that was laid out in this exclusive restaurant, which I had never had the privilege of experiencing. And I remember seeing a side of beef that had to have been at least half the cow. And I just looked at that, and I said, oh, my word, to myself, I've never seen so much food in my life. You know, here's all of this abundance. And it was a beautiful environment. Everything was just gorgeous. And I felt so honored to have been invited to participate in a lunch with this gentleman. And he watched me, and he could see my big eyes, I'm sure, as I looked at all of this sumptuous layout in this beautiful environment. And when we had served ourselves and we were sitting down and chatting, and he was a very, very wealthy man, he very quietly asked me how I felt about the place. And, of course, I was just bubbling. I was so excited. I said, this is just marvelous. I've never seen this kind of a food spread in my life. This is just incredible. And he sort of smiled, and we were chatting away, and he slipped in a little bit of wisdom in our conversation. He said, Donna, I've been around the world. He said, I have made a lot of money. I have millions and millions of dollars. But I learned something the hard way, and that is I can only wear one suit of clothes at a time, one pair of shoes at a time. I can only eat so much food. So I've learned that I discriminate about what I want to have. And he said, I choose what I consider the best. I give my time and my attention to what I consider is the best for me. Now, this was just part of a conversation we had, but it stuck with me. Because here was this person that could literally have anything he wanted. Anything he wanted. And I listened to those words, and they stuck with me because it made a very good point. You can have a lot of things in life. I learned a lot about this man who was not dressed, by the way, in a $5,000 silk suit. He was a man who was so comfortable with himself, he didn't dress to impress anybody. He dressed to be who he was as a person. And in that simple luncheon, in this beautiful environment, he gave me some wisdom that I've carried with me all through these years. And that is that you can't, one, always judge a person by the way they're dressed. Two, we can have a desire for many, many things, but we can only absorb and appreciate so much at a time. And wherever we are, we should enjoy that moment and live it with the finest and best quality possible. And part of that quality needs to be a quality of attitude. I've met people that were perfect strangers, that if I were to judge them by their appearances, I wouldn't have given them 5 cents worth of time. And yet, those strangers many times gave me $1 million worth of thoughtfulness and kindness. There are so many things that go on in life that you need to be aware of. Give life a chance to instruct you, to share with you its wonderful gifts. Don't be like the guy on the ferry that's always looking for the worst. Be more like the gal who's remembered the best and know that you can expect the best wherever you go. I know life isn't a straight line. We all have ups and downs. But if you can take that kind of a positioning, if you can empower yourself to have an attitude, not just of gratitude, but of expectation of the best, and when you hit a few boulders in life, maybe an avalanche or two, you dig yourself up and out of it, you move around it and say, okay, I don't want to go that way anymore. I'll go a different direction. Learn the lesson and move on. Because that is what life is. Life is a perpetual schooling of experience that if you're wise, you'll absorb what you can. And sometimes you're going to get your lessons from the most interesting places and from some of the most fascinating characters that you could ever cross a path with. And you know what? That's fun. Why? Because you get to talk about these interesting experiences. How boring is life going to be if you don't have something to talk about? It's all of these unusual, unique circumstances that make life a fascinating kaleidoscope of experiences, good, bad, and indifferent. But like Robbie said, you can only wear one pair of shoes at a time, one outfit of clothing at a time, and you can only eat so much food at any one sitting. So if you savor what you have, you enjoy where you are, make the best of what you've got, you're going to come out a winner. Now, I do want to let you know, I know we're coming up on the weekend, but next week we've got a dynamic lineup of people. We're going to be talking with Jill Fredston. We're going to be talking about Snowstruck. This is a woman who is from Alaska. She is a specialist in avalanches. What an occupation. And then also we're going to be talking about the healing power of anger with John Rifkin. We're going to be talking with Lynn Drail, who is the queen of eBay. Oh, is she a doll? I've had her on my show before. And then also we're going to be talking about the verbally abusive man, Patricia Evans. Fascinating, fascinating stuff. You're not going to want to miss any of it. Tell your friends. And remember, we're archiving the show so you don't have to miss any of them. Hey, we're going to take a break. Telephone lines are open. Won't you give us a call if you're interested in getting some intuitive insight? We're going to be right back. Don't you go away.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. If you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, give me a buzz at 877-876-5227, or from Canada, 888 810-8322, and also our other direct line of 530-876-3222. Now, I want to remind you that for those of you listening in Alaska, I am going to be up in Fairbanks, Alaska, and also Anchorage, Alaska. I'm going to be up there in about a week, and I'll be still doing my daily broadcast live from wherever I am. And we will be able to set up appointments if you want to meet with me in person or not. If you'd like, just give me a call at my 800 number. I'll give you all of those details. My office number is 800-872-8852. I'm also going to be doing a couple of appearances regarding education about glyconutrients. And, of course, if you're interested in updating some information on health and tips regarding a brand new breakthrough that is really making a difference in people's lives, physical wellness is very important to me. Go to my website, DelphiInternational.com. Touch the glyconutrients button, and there's information there, and there's a site you can go to, glycoscience.org, for more information, and give me a call if you'd like to follow up further with it. I wanted to share because so many people have the sniffles and the sneezes, and they're down with one bug of one kind or another, and one of those bugs can be just plain old-fashioned cold. Yuck. Really debilitates you. Really wipes you out. Nobody ever likes them. Well, here are some suggestions about some natural remedies that can be very, very, well, helpful. One is, if you find you've got a runny nose, try a cinnamon stick, or you can sprinkle some cinnamon on toast. But if you put the cinnamon stick in your coffee or your tea, or even in some cider, you know, if you want something hot to drink, this is winter time, that apple cider is just wonderful. Why cinnamon is so useful? It's an astringent that helps to drive up excess mucus in the lungs and nasal passages, and it boosts circulation, which can bring a very warm sensation to your hands and feet. Usually when we get colds, we just feel chilly all over. And if you've got a sore throat, why not try a kitchen basic? What is it? Oregano. It can wipe out sore throat pain in minutes. And I didn't know this about oregano, so this is a new one for me. Now, Gina Nick, who is a naturopathic doctor, and she's written about nutrition, she said the reason that oregano is so good for sore throats is that it has many of the same bacteria-killing ingredients found in the over-the-counter sore throat sprays. So this is what you do if you want to make your own oregano gargle. What you do is take and steep 1 teaspoon of oregano leaf in boiling water, cool, and then use it as a gargle. It'll kill germs on contact. If you want to loosen up and relieve your stuffed-up membranes, mint. Peppermint really does it. Why? Because it reduces nasal inflammation and relaxes the airways. They did a study on some folks that inhaled menthol, which is very popular for many people. They put it in hot water and put a towel over their heads and inhale the menthol, a component that is already in peppermint, and it when they did just the menthol, it felt dramatically less they felt dramatically less nasal congestion than those who didn't. You can sip peppermint tea and inhale the steam, or put a few drops of peppermint oil on your pillow. But it really is good just in hot steaming water, and you just breathe it in. It's really good. Now, garlic. They have been prescribing garlic for colds for a long time. Well, if it doesn't cure the cold, it'll keep people away from you for nothing else. And those that eat a clove of garlic a day were 60% less likely to catch a cold during peak sniffle season than with their non-garlic eating counterparts. And garlic is loaded with compounds that kill viruses. And there is a Dr. Brian Clement that said this is something that we've found to be true many, many times. So you can eat a clove of chopped raw garlic a day, sprinkled over salads or on toast, or maybe take a 500 milligram capsule daily. And if you're feeling chilly, ginger is what you want to do. You want to use this. It's loaded with more than a dozen antiviral compounds that specifically fight the rhinovirus, the most common kind of cold. It also helps to stimulate circulation, which, you know, takes that chill away. So you can try ginger tea, available at grocery stores, or you can make your own ginger tea by steeping sliced ginger root in hot water. And believe me, that's pungent stuff. you don't want to use a whole big chunk of ginger root. You won't be able to drink the tea. So if you take, you know, a few slices, experiment with it, and then crush it. Crush it, you know, like with the back of a spoon inside the cup, and then add your hot water. And what that does, that helps to release the oils and the various components inside the ginger. You'll be amazed how that works. And with a little bit of honey, ginger tea is really good stuff. If you have a nagging cough, you can try thyme. The therapeutic effect on the lungs is wonderful. It relaxes the muscles of the respiratory tract. And the reason it's so effective is it has an active ingredient, thymol. And they use that very ingredient in Vicks Vapor Rub. How did you know that? I don't know, but they did. They found that out. Steep 1 teaspoon of the dried spice in hot water and drink as a tea. And last but not least, one of my husband's favorite is licorice. That is something he just absolutely loves the taste of. The compounds, this is very good for chest congestion. The compounds in licorice soothe irritated membranes in the lungs and act as an expectorant, making it great for throat irritations, lung congestion, and even bronchitis. You can sip licorice tea or take a 500 milligram capsule of licorice root. So that's just a few tidbits of natural elements that you can use in working to stay healthy, and it's much of it's already right there in your kitchen cupboard. This is Donna Siebel, and I know we're just about out of time. I wanted to share quickly with you a story on Peace Rocks. And this was done by Millie Sims. She's in Champaign, Illinois. She said after her husband died, she had become very depressed. They'd been married for 55 years when he passed away. And she said her husband had just been an avid gardener, and he just loved using rocks from the environment that they were in to decorate their yard. And she said she found a few of them, held them in her hand, and they were very soothing to her. And she decided she was going to do something. This was just on a whim. She washed the stones and printed a word on each. Peace, love, faith, and hope. And she put them in a plastic bag, tied that bag with a curly ribbon, and passed them on to a friend who was going through her own kind of grieving process. And she said, during a particular holiday, I put a set of the river rocks in each of the gift bags our church gives to more than 60 shut-ins. She said, what's happened is that I'm now sending peace rocks to people all over the world on all kinds of occasions, birthdays, anniversaries, thank yous. And she said, in doing this, which started out just as a whim, I ended up reminding myself that faith and hope and love, all of these components can enable one to be at peace in life. And she said, by sharing them, by doing this, I've been able to be in touch with a lot of people throughout the world, and it's made a big difference in my life. All with a bunch of rocks. Would you believe? I do. This is Donna Siebel. My goodness, we are out of time. It's been a delight spending this time with you. We'll be back with you on Monday, same time, same place. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Drive safely. Take care during this winter time of the year. Don't be in a hurry. Talk with you on Monday. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.